RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
I'm pleased to welcome back who has become now a monthly contributor to this program here at Reality Check Radio, RCR. And that is Kit Knightley, editor of Off Guardian. Kit has been on this program a couple or three times already, but he's here really now in his capacity as our once a month UK correspondent or European correspondent or Northern, whatever. Whatever feels good. We'll call you, all right?
Yeah, that sounds great.
Yeah, well, it's good to have you back, and there's plenty to talk about. But maybe we could start off with just a few words from you, just to remind us again of Off Guardian, what it is, you're the editor of it, where it came from, and what it seeks to do in the media space.
Well, Off Guardian is an independent website that started up in 2015. But it takes its name from the fact that all the founding editors were kicked off the Guardian comment section for saying stuff they weren't allowed to say.
Yeah.
And it became basically, at first, it was just a platform for saying things that needed to be said. I suppose over time, it evolved more into a news website. And more than that, I would say what its general mission is, and certainly how I interpret it, is not so much posting news as trying to teach people how to interpret what the media says, because there's the whole second media language. When the media says something, they don't mean what they say. They mean something totally different. And if people were media literate in that sense, propaganda pushes would never work.
How is Off Guardian doing, especially now, because this is such a crazy time?
Oh, well, I mean, It's had its troubles. I mean, certainly it gets banned from lots of places. We got kicked off Patreon a few years ago. We were soft censored on social media and still are a lot of the time. I mean, you know, it's the battle we're all fighting at the moment, everybody in our line of work.
Sure is. Good to be in the trenches with you. Okay. Let's start. Kind of, well, not a random draw, but there's so many big issues to juicy issues to talk about. The presidential debate,
if you could really call it that.
Well, it wasn't. What would you call it?
Senior abuse. I mean, it was pretty awful to watch.
It sure was. Yeah. A train wreck, really, wasn't it?
Yeah. You have to wonder if they're going to replace him. I mean, they've all said they're going to replace him. Within a day of the debate, basically every newspaper in the Western world was writing an article about how and why they should replace Biden. I'm not sure they will, and I'm not sure if they did who they'd replace him with. But it will be interesting to see what happens.
Either it's elder abuse, or you put someone like him up in this position and into that very public debate. Everyone was watching it, albeit CNN, unless you're setting them up to fail, is what I thought.
Well, yeah, I mean, it might be a question of simply basically letting Trump win, because he's the chosen candidate to win next time. I mean, it might be that simple. I was surprised by how bad it was, and I haven't quite yet decided exactly how they're going to turn it.
Well, we had a situation in New Zealand, and that's kind of what I'm sort of thinking of when I just made my comments there, where we had, I think it was the 2017 election, general election, we had the Labour Party in the absolute doldrums, bottom floor in terms of their leader at the time, who was kind of a vanilla sort of guy, safe but vanilla, and their support was down. And 7 weeks out from the election, they flipped him out and put Jacinda Ardern in. And of course, instantaneously, everybody sort of took to that story. Mainstream media, of course, the women of the country were very impressed, and the people who worship the cult of youth, they were in. And in that 7 weeks, went from a hopeless situation to her winning, to say.
Yeah, something like that could happen. I mean, there are all sorts of, like, Ardern adjacents in America right now. I'm not sure exactly who they could pick. I mean, they've got Kamala sitting there, but she's awful. They could go back to Hillary, but that seems
awful.
Like just a terrible idea. I mean,
what about Michelle Obama?
I couldn't rule it out. I mean, you can't rule it out. The cult of Obama still does hold a lot of sway, very definitely. She's never held any political office at all. She's never run for office, as far as I know. So it would be a very odd thing to do, but I mean, they can make it work. Absolutely. They can make the story work. Certainly, I mean, if it was going to be a young up-and-comer in the Democratic Party, you'd be looking at America's Trudeau, America's Ardern sort of type.
Yeah, I wasn't thinking of a cookie cutter because everything for its time, but I'm thinking someone like Michelle Obama could create that flip. You'd instantly get a lot of the female vote. And, you know, because she's sort of unencumbered with scandal, there are a few questions there, et cetera, could be squeaky clean enough to sort of make that very quick transition from zero to hero or whatever you want to call it. So that, you know, that remains to be seen.
It's interesting. I mean, there was politicking like that going on in 2020, because for a long time, it didn't look like Biden was going to be the pick. I mean, he was really, he struggled in his primaries. It looked like it would be maybe Elizabeth Warren. And then just suddenly, obviously, they decided, no, Biden is the guy. And all the primaries, he had his miracle turnaround. And then...
Yeah, miracle.
Quote-unquote won the quote-unquote election with... Yeah. I mean, if you the mathematics of the 2020 election is something I could talk about for ages, but it was fixed. It just must have been. It doesn't make any sense otherwise.
Well, those two flat lines on the graph at the top that track each other is just statistically impossible, and it's repeated over and over.
There's one statistic which is my favorite, which very few people talk about, which is that Donald Trump increased his vote share. He went from, I believe, 71 million to 74 million, and he lost, making him the only incumbent president to ever increase his vote and lose. I mean, it just doesn't happen. It's absurd that it happened. So you can basically throw that out. I mean, which means that including 2020, including 2000 with George Bush, and then 2004, Bush-Kerry, at least three of the past five elections were definitely, provably fixed. So probably you can throw out the others as well, just in case. Arguably, the least fixed one was 2016, which I think is very interesting, because again, there were some flips at the last minute there. Hillary was supposed to win that. No question. The plan was always going to be Hillary to win. And then sometime in October, September, some backroom people clearly decided she was either too dangerous or too crazy or something to be put in office, because they switched sides and they had James Comey, the FBI director, come out with all the email stuff in October, which basically ruined her chances in a fair election.
Yeah, okay. So we can't even rely on the election process. Really? Who would want to keep Biden in place? I mean, we have to assume that he doesn't really know a lot of the time that he's actually in place, or that sort of comes and goes. But there's the war in Ukraine that the neocons, it seems, want to keep prosecuting, even though it's clear that it only leads to more conflict and escalation. And do they want to keep him there for the industrial-military complex? Too many secrets, too many things to hide for him to go now? I don't know.
I don't think so. I think Biden is entirely replaceable in terms of policy and in terms of, I mean, he's barely sentient. They could stick a tie on a bag of potatoes and it would all be the same in the end. The only reason to stick with Biden, honestly, and I do think this is happening around the world, but maybe mostly in America, is to basically degrade the office of the presidency. You've gone from Trump to Biden, and in a world of globalist campaigning and the idea of like nationalism being dangerous, to sort of erode confidence in national leaders would be a long-term policy. I mean, you could see roughly the same thing happening in the UK with Boris Johnson and I've even forgotten her name, Liz Truss.
Yep.
That's how much of an impression she made. And then Tiny Rishi as well. And in fact, the Biden-Trump debate sort of parallels in one evening the ongoing process in the British election as well, where the Tories have been subject to a humiliation ritual. The Tories are not going to win. I would be astounded if they had the Tories win this one.
It feels, from what we see at this end of the world, like a wipeout coming, a genuine wipeout coming their way.
For the Tories, I think it might be. The question is, And 2 weeks ago, I would have completely ruled this out as a possibility. But the question is whether or not they go Labour or Reform wins with Nigel Farage, which would be insane. But the stage is sort of set for the possibility that Farage could come in as like the British Trump and win out of nowhere.
Is there anything, you know, any developments to suggest that could, because we're only talking hardly any time. So that would have to be happening big scale right now. Do you see evidence of it?
Only I see hints rather than evidence of the way people talk about it, you know, the way the media cover it. I would still, if I had to put money on it, I would say it will be Labour and it will be by quite a lot. But I would not be at all surprised if Reform replaced the Conservatives as the official position and the Conservatives came third. Wouldn't be a surprise if that happened at all.
Yeah.
There's also the question of like coalition governments and stuff, which, you know, it might get messy. That's always a possibility because it distributes power and it makes everything messier and they quite like it that way. If you're in a coalition, then when things go to hell, you can blame part of the coalition, reform with a different group of people without having to have an election. It's just all very neat. Like when after the conservative liberal coalition with Nick Clegg and David Cameron, it was very much the Lib Dems that paid for that in the next election. They were gone. They were basically out of the Houses of Parliament completely. Then the Conservatives surged.
Keir Starmer, Sir Keir Starmer.
Yes.
And Rishi Sunak, if you just change him, does anything change, really? If you flip him around, is there much difference?
Well, Labour, I would say, are in some ways quite dangerous at the moment, coming in on a wave of potentially quote unquote progressive policies. I could see quite a few of the, you know, the new normal Great Reset ideas coming back quite strong under Labour. And if they have if they really do wipe out the Tories, if they have a huge majority, they'll pass who knows what with relative ease. It will be and then of course that sets the stage for more pandemics or climate lockdowns or whatever the hell they want to do in the future, which would be bad.
Aren't the public attuned to that now? And would they accept those sorts of oppressions now?
That's the thing. That would be the problem, because I don't think so. I think that's why there is a feeling of stagnation in global politics generally. That there is a direction they want to go. They want to carry on doing what they started doing during COVID. All over the world, every country in the world was doing that. And I think that there is a desire to keep doing that. The pushing, the lockdown, they didn't quite get to food rationing, but with bird flu coming, they might. Mm. That kind of thing. But there is also a feeling that they pushed too hard with COVID and that people won't stand for it. And there is a sort of holding pattern going on. They're kind of trying to assess when they can go again. And I don't feel like they feel that yet. I think that's part of the reason we're having the rash of elections, is they think that maybe getting new faces in power will soften people up for it. Because, you know, everybody who's new to office gets that window of like...
Yeah, honeymoon.
Yeah.
Again, we're back to who's they. Well, I note that there's a couple of individuals associated with the Biden campaign, and I'll just bring up the name of one of them. I'll tell you in just a moment, but it kind of points to the issue of, you know, who's driving, who's really in charge. Yeah, who's really in charge? And I'll just bring this up right now. Mike Donilon. Have you ever heard of him? Mike Donilon, he's the top investor of BlackRock, and his brother is the top Biden advisor. And Mike Donilon is in charge of $10 trillion. So I don't know if it's them, but you can see the forces, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the BlackRock Vanguard sort of, I mean, it's international or supranational corporate entities that are in charge. And in some ways, it's a sort of a loose coalition. Like George Carlin famously said, you don't need a formal conspiracy when interests converge. Like there's a sort of unspoken knowledge of what is good for their class and their type of people.
Hmm. Yeah, and I suppose if you're controlling that amount of money, you can put countries under, you know.
Absolutely. I mean, it goes back to the 70s, the idea that the countries don't matter, you know, the famous speech in Network in 1976 or 77. There are no nations, there are just ExxonMobil and AT&T.
Yeah, yeah. Wow, okay. Interesting, the similarity between the two, you know, UK and the United States. There does seem to be.
And France as well.
Yeah, I was going to mention France. We got our one out of the way last year, so we've sort of come through that. Yeah, so Marie Le Pen and her stunning first round result. Is Macron toast, is he?
Not only is Macron toast, I think Macron is voluntarily toast. I think Macron just wants out. I mean, right. He was never supposed to be president again. Now, that's another very strange story. He came out of nowhere to win that presidency, formerly having worked for some major financial institution. I forget which one. They all blend together. It was JP Morgan, or it was IMF, or it was something like that. I don't remember which. I can look it up if you'd like. But he was a banker, a financier. He was not a politician until suddenly he was president of France. And honestly, he's never been especially good at what he's trying to do. He's never been especially charismatic. He's just sort of been there. And I don't get the impression from watching him that he will at all miss being president, if you see what I mean. I think he's quite like Merkel and Ardern in your part of the world, quite happy to jump ship now that COVID basically took a lot of wind out of everybody's sails, and they're happy to step back from that kind of life. I would be really, really shocked if he won. Whether or not that means Le Pen wins is a different question. There might be some, again, some progressive that comes up to the left of Macron, or some coalition put in place, but I don't think Macron's going to stay, whatever happens.
He said some silly things regarding Ukraine, like, you know, sort of talking about putting French troops in there. He seemed to get landed on by a ton of bricks after that, like there was no go. Do you think he sort of screwed up a bit?
I don't know if you can call it screwed up, because I think a lot of the time the machinery puts bad opinions in, like they put opinions out there to be disapproved of. So I'm not sure if it was a mistake, if it was just his role as the outgoing to say the unpopular thing. You see what I mean?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
Whether or that is to further make him unpopular or to discredit the opinion by having him say it, you could never really tell. It's one or the other, sometimes both. You know, like just how in America, if they want everybody to disapprove of something, or everybody of the certain liberal media class to disapprove of something, they'll simply have Trump say it's a good idea.
The amazing thing about back to US, the messaging that came in after that debate, and you had people who have been on, you know, the lefty mainstream media, the CNNs and the MSNBCs and all of that, you know, who were only a few weeks ago were saying, he's the sharpest I've ever seen him. I think that was Morning Joe. And then, you know, a week and a half later, it's like, oh, no, we, you know, oh, dear.
That says to me that there was some flip behind the scenes, because this is, I mean, as awful as Biden was, Biden's been doing stuff like that since before he was elected the first time. I mean, he's dotted around, you know, putting his wife's fingers in his mouth and forgetting words and just standing there staring like a dementia patient. He does that all the time. And it's been the business of the mainstream media to pretend that he doesn't. Oh, he's got a cold. Oh, he's got a stammer. He's got the weirdest cold and the weirdest stammer you'll ever see in your life. And he's had it for years, and it slowly gets worse, even in his late 70s, early 80s, which is bizarre. And for them to suddenly say, oh, actually, maybe he is too old, suggests that there are some people behind the scenes who would quite like to be president, perhaps.
I don't know how they can say it with a straight face, though. I really don't know how they can say it.
Because I suppose, I mean, if you're the kind of people that get into that position, you have the mental mechanisms to believe what you're supposed to believe. I mean, it's not a question of simply being dishonest. These people are programmed. They don't see their own dishonesty. They simply believe what is convenient for them to believe. They are vessels. They're honestly, and it feels bad to say it, but a lot of them I would class as barely human anymore. I mean, they're exactly the kind of person that, was it Morning Joe? Joe Scarborough?
Yeah.
Does he have a functioning brain? Does he have a functioning soul? Who can tell anymore? He just sits there and says the most ridiculous stuff that anybody with an IQ of over 90 could see, simply untrue.
Yeah, but if the cash register rings every time he says something, well, you keep on doing it, I suppose. But yeah, maybe not a functioning soul is probably more accurate, would be my call. Julian Assange's release. I think last time we talked, we were talking about, you know, could it happen? Would it happen?
Could it happen? It didn't happen the way I expected, honestly.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I was thinking if it did happen, it would be a pardon. And it would be maybe post-election, maybe pre-election, it would be mooted as a pardon to win some votes. The way it did happen, I would say, is actually much worse. I didn't expect the plea deal. The plea deal is bad. The plea deal is very bad. You know, it's not bad for Assange and his family. And, you know, you could argue, and I'm sure people would, that he earned the right to get out and go home if that's what he's going to do. But on principle, the plea deal is very bad because he basically admitted that he was wrong. And it sets now the precedent for publishing stuff, getting you put in prison, which is not a good thing. I mean, I don't need to explain why that's a bad thing.
Yeah. I heard a clip from his court appearance in Saipan, and he did make the point in responding to judges' questions in the short clip I heard that the Constitution of the United States and his being charged under the Espionage Act was in conflict in his mind. And he just thought he'd have to live with that. So he did make that point. But yeah, you can understand the guy taking it, but should he have taken one for the team, do you think, Kit, and just hung in there?
I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say that, isn't it? I mean, there are all sorts of doubts about WikiLeaks and Assange in the first place. I mean, quite interesting ones that honestly we don't have time to go into. But if the story is as it appears, then it seems awful harsh to say, no, he has to take one for the team.
Yeah.
But he also had been doing that already, like constantly. Like if this plea deal existed, I don't know why, if you were going to take it, you wouldn't take it years ago. So there might be some more steps to the story we're going to see come out, I think.
Okay. Yeah. Money?
I don't know. I don't know if there might be an actual pardon as well, depending on how the election goes and everything, on how the story is responded. I don't know what WikiLeaks will do now. Like, for example, if WikiLeaks, Assange, or people associated with WikiLeaks and Assange come out now, because, I mean, you know how he has been on 9/11 in the past. You know, he never talked about it. If WikiLeaks come out now supporting COVID, for example, or supporting vaccination, then that would be interesting.
Okay, so you're saying, yeah. Yeah, in terms of, I think, what he's allowed to keep on WikiLeaks, see, everything that's published, he can keep there, but I think there were some files that he couldn't publish that he still held on to. We never did find out who leaked the DNC files. I always thought it might be Seth Rich. What do you reckon?
I mean, it might have been. I mean, that actually ties back into what we were talking to earlier with the switch from Hillary to Trump. That was very clearly, whoever leaked it was clearly part of that plan, to the whole, like, at the last minute, oh dear, no, she's too crazy. She's too crazy even to be president of the United States. We're going to have to let
And
Trump
remember,
win
instead. She even was having trouble walking back then, remember? You know,
oh,
out of that
yeah,
van and up and
I
down
mean,
stairs
it was
and everything.
Just like that Biden thing. Then on September the 11th, the anniversary in 2016, just before the election, the day before that, some people had been posting online about Hillary's health. And all these articles appeared defending her health and saying she's fine, she's just got allergies or something. And then at the September the 11th memorial in New York, on September 11th, 2016, she collapsed. I mean, I don't know if you remember, but they basically had to drag her into the back of a car.
Yeah, into the black van.
Leaving one of her shoes in the gutter. It was a quite famous photo at the time.
Yeah.
She was not all right. I mean, maybe that was it. Maybe they were afraid she was going to die or something. I don't know. But she was clearly failing health-wise.
But here she is now, a comeback. She's made a comeback health-wise, it seems.
Yeah.
Is that really her?
That's the thing. Unfortunately, we live in a world there where you can't be like, they put a lookalike of her out on that day to somebody in 2016. They had a press thing where she appeared waving at photographers who were all about 50 yards away. And it was clearly not her. I mean, it wasn't her. I mean, we all know that politicians do use standards for that kind of thing. And they clearly have wheeled one out the door, and not an especially good one, wave at the people. Everything's fine. I wrote an article just last week or early this week. I don't know. They all blur together in the end. About how there is this adjustment we need to make. And I wasn't thinking of any specific incidents, and it's not something that it's not like everything's pretend sort of reality yet, but everything potentially could be. I wrote an article about how the advancement of technology like AI and stuff does mean that you can't really trust any photo or video you see necessarily.
I agree, yeah.
And you should. It's just something you need to factor into the way you process any picture you see online. It might be made up. It might be fake. And that extends to video and voices now. So who can say for sure?
Doesn't it even go to real people? Because I've never seen it like in person, but, you know, these people ripping off masks and being completely different. You could even turn up in public if you're done up the right way, and who would know?
I mean, you can't rule it out, certainly. I mean, good makeup can make anybody look like anybody else.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it is really odd, like Biden's turnaround from being a doddering wreck at the debate to giving that speech he gave the day after the debate. I mean, maybe they just gave him the right drugs this time or something. I don't know. But
or it's play acting.
Or it could be play acting. It could be. They could, for some reason, have told him to go out there and embarrass himself. I don't know why they would do that or why he would agree, but they could have done that.
Yeah.
I mean, the reason he'd agree is probably the photos or whatever they have on people like that.
Well, of course, yeah. I hadn't thought of that. It's like, Joe, remember the pictures?
Yeah.
And not only of you, but Hunter and the brother and the wife and the... Oh, God.
And again, though, that's...
I know.
Then you come back in a loop because the pictures don't have to be real. I mean, if they did leak, like, pictures of Hunter Biden with some 12-year-old Cambodian prostitute or something, you could never be sure they were real. It's crazy, the unreality of the media landscape.
And isn't it interesting that the wife of Macron is, how do I put it, of interest to people? The gender, let's say, and kind of the same thing back in the States with you know who. There's even that has a common thread. I don't recall those very, stars very lining up like that before.
Very strange. It's almost like just oddness for oddness' sake, just question marks for question marks' sake. I mean, I have no idea.
No, neither do I.
And I suppose you'd have to argue it doesn't really matter in the end. But it's all very strange, and why these questions.
It matters, Kit, if someone lets a nuke go, and if Biden's with their doctrine of the commander in chief can order a strike and doesn't have to ask anyone else. Imagine him, it's like, whoops, I fell on the button. I was hoping to open the fridge,
I don't believe that's true, though. I haven't believed that's true for a very long time. I don't believe they ever put George Bush Jr. in charge of the button. I think. Maybe they gave him a button that's not connected to anything and told him to press it whenever he wants. But I doubt very much that they let one man make that decision, especially when he has a brain the size of a peanut like Bush did, or his neurons are as corroded as Biden's obviously are. It's just wouldn't be worth it. Wow. It's not his decision to make. I highly doubt it's anything like one person's decision to make.
Speaking of conflict, I noticed Zelensky, I saw a clip of Zelensky a few days ago. I think he was at some European Union function. I can't quite remember exactly where he was. But to me, he was speaking in English. To me, he looked really scared.
Well, I mean, cocaine is a hell of a drug, isn't it? I mean, I think Zelensky isn't necessarily long in office. I think, I mean, there's been a change in tone. You saw Farage go on the BBC and talk about the Russian perspective on the war in Ukraine. And you saw Jeffrey Sachs talk to Tucker Carlson and Piers Morgan about the Russian perspective on the war in Ukraine. I think that's softening people up for the idea of a ceasefire or some kind of deal. I think once that happens, Zelensky's done. I think he probably knows that he will be the scapegoat in Ukraine. He'll take his money and run.
Well, he'll have to run far because you might have like a million families chasing you down for killing their
sons. Oh, he'll be fine. He'll go like Yatsenyuk, his breeder says. He'll be given a job as like associate professor of politics at some American university or something crazy like that.
He could go back to playing the piano with his, you know what? Fall back on something he knows. Okay, so you think there's going to be some, the MSM messaging change that you just mentioned is get ready, right? You're saying get ready, there's something coming.
I think they might wind it down. Again, it's hard to put a timeline on it. It probably won't be immediate, but I'm getting the impression it's the first steps towards a ceasefire, maybe not even till after the American election in November. It can, you know how they are with that kind of thing. You know, it can be like, if Trump wins, it would be Trump's triumphant first thing he does is broker peace somewhere. They like to do that. They did it with Obama. They did it with Reagan, with the hostage thing. You know, they like to give the new president something to do immediately. Hmm. Now, that might be Israel related or it might be Ukraine related, but I could see either.
Okay. In the meantime, people die. So that's no good.
Well, from their perspective, people are entirely replaceable. No matter how many of them you kill, they always grow back. What difference does it make?
Hmm. Okay, so can you remember such a sort of a, like an alignment of big things happening all at once, you know, right across the globe? I mean, there was a coup in Bolivia. I don't have time to talk about that, but there's another thing in that part of the world. You've got US, you've got France, you've got UK, there's Ukraine, there's Russia. Look, if a ceasefire or anything comes about in this, Russia wins, doesn't it? Can they tolerate that? Or is Russia winning just part of the kind of play act?
Well, I mean, on the face value of the war in Ukraine narrative, I don't think you could ever say Russia won. Not really. I mean, not compared to what their stated aims were to begin with. It would be very much more of a stalemate than a win.
But if they come away with that territory that they've got, eastern Ukraine, that's and it stays Russian.
Except pre 2022, Russia didn't want that. That's what was so interesting about the beginning of the war. That territory in Ukraine was of no value to Russia politically. And I've talked about this before. The Donetsk and Luhansk, their value was as a proxy vote in Ukraine, if you see what I mean. You had Ukraine is very much split east-west.
Yeah.
And eastern Ukraine is pro-Russia. So their vote basically had with some, the people there put a pro-Russia president in place pre the 2014 coup. And their existence as part of Ukraine is basically a guarantee Ukraine can't join NATO because the votes, the pro-Russia votes in eastern Ukraine would not allow it. The moment you take those parts of eastern Ukraine and make them part of western Russia instead, you have a smaller Ukraine that is entirely anti-Russia and will definitely join NATO if given the opportunity.
Oh, I hadn't thought of that. Mm-hmm.
It's a bizarre thing for Russia to do, and they didn't want it. In 2014, having taken Crimea when the Donetsk People's Republic was created, it petitioned to join Russia. And Russia said, no, don't want you. No offense. You need to stay in Ukraine. They wanted a federalized autonomous republic of Ukraine situation. They wanted Minsk too. That was the deal. The Minsk II deal was put in place. That's what they wanted. They wanted Donetsk and Luhansk to stay as autonomous regions of Ukraine because it gave them basically a proxy vote in Ukrainian politics. Very important and very clever. And why they ever changed their mind on that, I do not know. But it was in that, if we're still living in that political, geopolitical world, it was a bad mistake. And if we're not, then something else is going on. And it was like the war was more important than the old fashioned geopolitics. And so in that sense, you could say the war, who wins the war isn't really, I mean, we're in 1984 territory where the winning of the war is sort of immaterial because the, yep. started up again because it, the whole purpose of it is to munch up people and munch up metal and munch up money.
Of course, on both sides, all sides.
Exactly.
Yeah. Wow. All right. Everyone has to go away and think about this now. It's hard to know. It's like you say, nothing is believable ultimately anymore, and I'm not used to that. It's like free floating, you know, it's free floating, this sort of feeling.
Yes, and it's unsettling. You're wanting stuff that you're looking for stuff that is grounded in reality, and unfortunately, there isn't much of it going on at the moment.
Help! Oh, well. Well, thank you for coming on, Kit, and helping us try and figure it out. We appreciate that.
No problem. It's always good to talk to you.
Right now, free speech is under heavy attack in New Zealand and overseas, with governments constantly devising new ways to enforce censorship. To make sure you never miss the critical news and breaking stories you rely on, join the RCR mailing list today. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.